Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues. And today we are humbled, we are honored to have with us two incredible guests. We are talking about the hosts of the Bachelors in the City podcast, Peter Weber and Dusty.
What's going on, guys? It is great to be here with y'all in the pit.
I can't believe it. You guys are wearing your Do You Who Do You t-shirts. We can't thank you enough for that. We can't thank you enough for joining us. And we have a bunch of questions that we want to get to. We came on your show a little while back and we went through your rookie seasons, season 15 of The Bachelorette. That was Hannah Brown. And today we're going to get into season 24 of The Bachelor, which is, at least by our understanding, the first professional season ever. It's the first, the beginning of the professional era. We'll get into kind of why that is and everything as we go. But before we get into any of that, we want to ask both of you guys some questions that are just kind of germane to like what your relationship to media is and how you grew up and how all of that kind of influences your experience in the biggest reality franchise in the world. So let me start by asking this. Where did you both grow up and what was your media intake like? What kind of TV shows did you watch or music or video games, whatever you did?
I'll let you take it, Desi. Go for it.
All righty. So I'm from Southern Illinois, very small town, about 5 hours south of Chicago, right on the border of Missouri and Kentucky. And man, media, a lot of reality TV.
As a kid, a young kid, you're watching.
As a kid, I used to love coming home from work and watching like the Maury Show and like Jerry Springer.
How old were you working?
Oh, did I say work? I meant coming home from school. My bad.
I think Dustin's a little confused at the end.
Whoopsie doo.
Like, I mean, I definitely wasn't working.
Coming home from school. Sorry, it's been a while. Yeah, I used to watch a lot of reality TV, like the Maury Show or Jerry Springer, and like Let's Make a Deal and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That was like those exciting shows to me. I think those were also on ABC, a lot of them. I used to watch those with my grandparents, and yeah, that's probably about it.
Company Man.
Yeah. What about you, Pete?
Wait, what did you like about Maury and Jerry Springer? What was like that like to watch as a kid?
Probably shouldn't have been watching Jerry Springer, but I don't know. I kind of knew as a kid it was trash TV, and it was just funny seeing all these characters just on there just acting wild with no shame. I don't know. I just always thought it was hilarious.
Okay. I would say, so I grew up in, I'm from the East Coast, born out of Virginia, and then moved down to Florida for a little bit, but grew up mainly, you know, end of middle school through just the last year up out in LA. And as a kid, I was a big, big Disney fan. Loved the Disney Channel original movies. You know, would look forward to those every month.
Oh, like what?
Man, bring me back now. This is Brink was one of my favorite ones. I probably watched that a million times.
Peter, you Brink. Were a Disney kid. You were a Disney kid.
I don't know why you always say that. I would have loved to have been. That would have been so cool.
He's a Disney kid.
Shoot, what's the 13th Year? I remember that was one of my favorite ones with the mermaid swimmer guy. I don't know. I was a huge Disney fan.
Oh, you like the nautical sports
ones. Yeah. I was a big swimmer
too. Did you
too.
Skateboard?
No, I was into rollerblading. I did that for like a hot minute, but definitely I was a junior Olympic swimmer. So I was really big into swimming when I was younger. So that was the whole 13th Year, I think, connection. But, and then I would say I was always a big game show fan. Like Dusty said, like, you know, Millionaire, Amazing Race. I loved watching that. Fear Factor, The Days with Joe Rogan. I loved watching. I wouldn't say really reality TV. I didn't honestly see ever. The first season I ever watched The Bachelor was Jake's, the pilot season, my freshman year of college. That was really my first. Yeah,
season Whoa. 14, I believe.
Man, you guys are good. Yeah, I don't even know what season it was, but that was my first intro to reality.
The first pilot.
And I remember actually meeting him. It was so funny. In the airport, I was like, this probably like 19 then. Yeah, my sophomore year or something right after. Yeah, so I wasn't a huge reality fan until I would say college.
And what was your first experience, each of you, with social media? Like, when did you get your first account? What even was that account?
Mine was MySpace.
Yeah.
I was a senior in high school. I was a little late to it, I think. But yeah, I had a MySpace. And it was so interesting. It was kind of cool, kind of fun. I grew up in a small town, so I don't even know why we had it, because it was such a small town. It's not like you could go out and meet new people around. But it was cool to put like your favorite song on your front page.
Totally.
And you could design your front page however you wanted it. I thought it was the coolest thing.
Rank your friends.
Rank your friends. Very cool. Yeah, that's what I had.
I would say I was always late to the game with every kind of level of social media. Like MySpace, I was one of the, you know, last ones in my friend group to get that, but you know, ended up enjoying it. And then Facebook, I remember when I signed up, it was like supposed to be just for college kids. Like that was like the original intent, I think. And then, but I think I got it in high school or something, or attempted to or whatnot. And then Instagram.
You used a fake email, didn't you?
Probably. I don't remember that. But then Instagram, I remember my brother.
Popeye at Harvard.
Yeah. No, that's right. Because I went to Baylor, and I had, my Baylor email was my, maybe I did do it in college then, because I used my Baylor email for Facebook. And then Instagram, my brother was the whole reason that Pilot Pete ever came to fruition. He told me to make an Instagram account. My younger brother too, which is hilarious. And I was like late to the game for that. And I was like, I don't know what to make for my name. He's like, yeah, do Pilot_Pete. And I was like, oh, that's a cool name. And then just kind of did that. And I was always late to the game with social media. I've never been the biggest social media guy. Like I've always kind of had to be forced or, you know, kind of told or whatnot to kind of get into it. That's been me.
Wait a minute. Let me take you guys back. Actually, the first thing I was on was MSN chat. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah. Does MSN? That count? Is that really
no.
social media?
What is that?
You have a profile. You're chatting with... What's that?
Like AIM? Instant Messenger?
Yeah, it was similar.
Yeah, Instant Messenger. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was my first one. I remember that. And I remember actually you could do, you could talk to people all around the world and whatnot. That was actually pretty cool. Yeah.
I don't even know. I've never heard of that. Okay.
Before your time, youngin.
So.
Peter, I need to get this out of the way before we get lost in the weeds. Do you play Pokemon Go?
You know, I don't. I've downloaded the app and I need to. I'm the biggest Pokemon fan ever. So, I've never really gotten into the Go thing. I'm a big card collector. That's my go-to. And then, you know, getting nostalgic, you know, Game Boy back in the day was all the Pokemon games when I was little. I was obsessed with those, but never been a big Go fan.
Now's the time. It's at the peak of its popularity.
Yeah, I guess New York, too, is probably a perfect spot to go catch them all. So,
getting into some more Bachelor-centric stuff, you guys obviously came into the game both with the most 4TRR of intentions for the right reasons. But in the contemporary era, especially when you guys played, everybody comes into the game at least with some awareness that you can potentially become an influencer out of this, that maybe you're going to get a big Instagram boost. When was the first moment that you guys felt like in your playing time, like, holy shit, this might actually be happening. Like, this might be the result of me coming into the game.
I think for Peter too, probably. We had a rugby event with Hannah Brown, and I remember they brought out a crowd of people.
Yeah.
And there were so many girls out there, and they were just like yelling for like really going crazy just to like see us, I think some of them knew our names already because some of our names were leaked. That point I was like, oh, they're serious.
They knew JPJ. I remember that.
Yeah. Whoa. I was like, oh, this is serious. They're not lying, because I never really watched your show. Like, you really blow up from this show, and I think that's when
you can for
hit
sure.
Me.
Yeah,
I think I remember we had a. I mean, obviously everyone knows in today's era for sure. You know, a lot of people can get a big platform from it, but we had a talk early on, just like a sit down chat with one of the producers, one of the top execs there, and he just was kind of. Welcoming us all to the whole experience and kind of what to expect moving forward. And, you know, he was like, this is a crazy, this is a very unique thing that you guys are embarking on right now. This, potentially you could, meet, the love of your life. And this could, be the start of a great life together. With that, it's going to come a lot of stuff with the media. And it was kind of like the first kind of media training that we ever, not really training, but just like talk we ever had about it. He's like, and one of you in here, a couple of you in here are gonna probably blow up on social media, and it's crazy to say, and one of you in here will probably be the Bachelor. And it's like, that's always crazy. This is his words, always crazy for me to not know who it is at this moment. And I think that was for me the first time I was like, wow, yeah, just kind of hearing it from someone's mouth that's actually been doing this for a couple of years and whatnot, and what to possibly expect. That was like the first time I kind of maybe thought about that. But then like you really don't, I guess, yeah, the whole 1,000 people, I remember it was like around 1,000 people that were at the rugby tournament or the rugby game. That kind of brings it back a little bit, but when you're in it, you really don't think, you're so removed from everything. Like you don't, like you said, you don't have your phone or anything. You're so removed from it. It's maybe after, when you get everything back and you're back to normal life, that stuff even starts to possibly be a thought again.
But that media conversation you have with a producer, that's before you guys start shooting. They bring you in and sit you down and say, this is potentially what could happen to you.
It was once you're already there, once you're like already kind of in the house,
Early on in the season.
Yeah, early on. And just like...
Man, that's fascinating.
Just, kind of opening your eyes that this is... It's kind of a life-changing thing. And, yeah. You never really quite know how it's all going to turn out. But...
Know who else has conversations like that? Professional football players, basketball players, baseball players. When you get drafted into those leagues, they have the exact same thing happen. They'll have a person from the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever come in, sit you down. Sometimes individual teams have that person, and they basically tell you, like, you're about to get rich, you're about to get famous. This is how your life is going to change, and here's how to properly handle that so you don't go off the rails or whatever the case may be. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. It was all like having our back and everything. It wasn't like It was a good conversation, but yeah, bring that question kind of brought me back to that moment.
So you are looking around the room. You're like, some of us might blow up, but Peter, you eventually do get that call you are the Bachelor. What was it like to receive that call?
It was exciting. It was super exciting. You know, it's kind of a period there where you don't know what's going on for a while, and you're held in suspense. And I think everyone that kind of watched me through, like, I probably bought into it right too much into the whole process, and so I was like, you know, just full of excitement and like optimism that if I was the one that was chosen, like I was going to go. I was just a few short months from, you know, really having my life change forever, because I was about to meet, you know, my dream girl that it was finally going to work out with. So, you know, maybe I put too much pressure on me too or whatnot in hindsight, but it was an exciting call. I remember it vividly, and we kind of did a cool thing with, you know, telling my family and kind of keeping it a secret to then reveal it to them. And so that was exciting. It was kind of hard to keep, but you know, obviously, yeah, there's not many people that kind of go through that. So it was an honor, honestly, for me. I was like, man, this is, you know, quite the honor, and I'm not going to take it lightly and just be super grateful for it. And I was just looking forward to a lot.
So your season starts season 24, as we talked about. This is what we deem the first season of the professional era. It's the last season before the pandemic. And what we mean by the professional era is that this season has what we feel are two players who come in who have seen enough of the show through adolescence and childhood that they just kind of intrinsically know what the different kind of game mechanics are. And those two players are your two finalists, Hannah Anselos and Madison Pruitt. And so we want to just kind of go through some of the like most important things that happened in that season that really defined it, and get your perspective as a lead, which is like, you never get to hear this, what it is like from that person's perspective, who's like at the center of all of this, trying to maintain it all so that it doesn't fall apart, even though things are going crazy constantly. You're like in the eye of a hurricane, basically.
Yeah.
At least from our estimation, that's what it looks like from an outside observer's viewpoint, you know?
Right.
So on your night one, producers throw in a night one curveball. This is when they introduce some element that is meant to drastically shift the game and get all the players really anxious and like, oh shit, what's going on? And in your case, they bring back Hannah Brown. What is that like for you, seeing her step out of the limo? And I assume just being like, shit, what is going on here? Because obviously you didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah, it was, I think I've said it a couple of times here. I remember when, you know, that, you know, it took a while for, she was by herself in that limo. So there was no other girls throughout the night. Obviously, there was multiple limos that come through, and she was the only one in that one. And it was one of the last ones. And I was just sitting there for a while waiting for the door to open, and it just wasn't. I'm just like thinking like, you know, what's going to go on here? And really in my mind was not expecting it to be her at all. So she opened that door, and at first I didn't actually realize it was her. I just, you know, noticed this beautiful girl and, you know, great big smile and whatnot. And then I could look closer, and I like took a double take. I was like, wow, that's Hannah. And then it just like, it I remember being like kind of just flooded with like emotions. I was like, cause I didn't know also what she was doing, like why she was there. I didn't know she was there to give me wings or, you know, my wings back when I gave them to her the previous season. And you know, she's walking up, and I'm thinking, you know, I think at that point I was like, you know, obviously hopeful. Maybe she's, you know, she's, I think cause she was filming another show. She was doing the Dancing with the Stars thing. And so I remember thinking leading up to the show, I'm like, huh, I wonder if they would do that, if they'd bring her back, if she'd even want to come back. But I'm like, I don't think logistically that could ever work. And so then I'm just like, the wheels start turning, and I'm like, I wonder why she's here. And you know, I think a part of me wanted her to like say, oh, she wanted to come and give it a shot. That would have been a crazy, I don't even know what that would have been. But yeah, and I was flooded with emotions, I remember, and just, it was a really sweet, sweet gesture by her. And I just was, you know, it was really good to see her. And, you know, and then I think a little bit of me, I was like, you know, like, ah, okay, she's not coming in. And then I quickly got over that though. And, you know, obviously I just met 30 other women, and I was excited to get that going. But it was a quick kind of just time was like frozen for a second. And I was like, I had forgot that I had just met 30 other women. And I like immediately kind of went back to her. And I had to quickly kind of gather myself again and pull myself out of that little, you know, not trance, but just wherever headspace I was in. So I remember I had to go take like a moment after and then kind of compose myself. And then that's the first time you go in to greet all the women waiting in the mansion there. So, yeah, just a lot of emotions.
Did it give you any pause that you were like, wait a minute, what have I gotten myself into? Because like you said, you didn't know she's going to show up. This is obviously something the producers are doing to try and throw everybody off their game that night.
Yeah.
Is there any small piece of you that was just like, oh, Jesus, this is night one they're doing this to me?
Yeah, I think for sure. I was like, holy shit, like, what am I doing right now? Like, if that's the first night, like, I was sold. I was shocked that she didn't. I was sold that she was coming back at the end.
Yeah.
I was sold the entire time, even through all my other relationships starting to mature. And, you know, obviously, I didn't even know she was going to be in the group date until a little bit later on, which was, you know, only like a week later. But towards the end of the show, I was so convinced, like, in Australia, I'm like, I know she's coming. And I kept asking, like, the producers, I'm like, you know, is this happen? Like, I just was pushing them for it because I was so sold that they were going to do that to me at the end. And, you know, obviously it didn't happen, but
dude, we were too.
Like, yeah,
I literally
you were
thought,
convinced by the previews too.
That's what I thought your mom was talking about when Sweet Numbs is saying, bring her home to us. I was like, yeah, that's Hannah Brown. She's got to come back.
That's, yeah, that could have totally made sense. I remember we were flying out to the Uluru, the Northern Territory there for one of those last dates. And it was like a 45 minute flight out there. And with one of the top producers there, I was just like, I was asking, like, is this happening? Just, you got to be real with me. Like, I can only handle so much. I'm about to break here if, like, this happens. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But, yeah, never happened. But I think that first night is what got me kind of going so crazy in my head. I'm like, shit, if they're doing this, you never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're expecting her the whole time, which I'm sure has got to derail you at least somewhat.
Yeah.
Night one, Hannah Ann Celeste plays the role of what we call the first responder, where she hands you your drink. That's a sign of producer favor. She cringles you a painting during your one-on-one time, gets the first consensual kiss, comes back, gets a steal later in the night, gets another steal to do another kiss, essentially three one-on-one times, and she gets the Fimp Bros. This is, in our minds, the greatest night one in history. How did you make that decision to give her the Fimp? Was everyone on board with the decision?
The Fimp.
The first impression rose.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. literally, never heard that.
Term. I don't even realize.
I mean, Hannah Ann, I mean, you guys, anyone that watched that first episode, she just was, you know, just absolutely stunning, right? That's the first impression anyone is, you know, how that you remember them, how they look, right, coming up to you. And then I said, wow, this girl is absolutely gorgeous. And then just her sweetness just exuded from her, you know, on top. It's almost like, I think for Hannah M, I remember, yeah, I talked with her really early on. And it was almost like, you know, those girls in like high school that it's just like, they're just too hot. And like, it's too good to be true. Like they can't be also really cool. Like, they know how like good looking they are. They've mm-hmm. heard that their whole life, and just, it's like kind of gotten stuck in their head, unfortunately, and whatnot. I think I had that. I was like, oh man, like, this is, there's no way this girl's actually really cool too. Like, she's just too pretty for that. Like, something has to be off here. And I think even like in the beginning, I was like, oh man, is this real? Like, you know, she was so sweet. Like, it almost seemed like too good to be true. And, it just wasn't. Like, she was, that's who she is. That's who Hannah Ann is. And it got me really excited, you know, quickly after having Hannah Brown there, you know, and kind of being in that headspace, then, you know, having those talks with Hannah Ann, and then she was, you know, I got to see her a couple times throughout the night, and, you know, I thought it was super thoughtful. The painting with her dad, you know, bringing that to me, just touched me in a lot of ways. And I was like, it got me excited. I was like, hey, maybe she isn't too good to be true. And that was the start of that.
The following week at a cocktail party, one of the most important events of your season takes place, Champagne Gate. And this is something that we will never forget about. It was one of the most entertaining things that season. Are there just bottles of champagne everywhere? Were there only two? Are you aware of the fact at all as a lead that like all these little kind of mini dates are being set up all around the mansion, all around the backyard, and the producers may or may not be trying to sabotage various players? Like, how do you navigate a cocktail party like that when all of these other players, because you've been a player on the opposite end of it too. So you've seen it from both ends. I assume you have to have a little sympathy for the players in that respect because you've like had to do what they're doing. You too, Dustin. So even when you're watching this kind of stuff, Dustin, like when you see Champagne Gate, who are you empathizing with when you're watching this shit at home? And how are you like navigating that as a viewer who's also been a player?
I felt bad for both girls, actually. I mean, I don't think it was Hannah Ann's fault at all that she just happened to pick up a champagne bottle that the producers had, you know, probably sat there on purpose. And I felt a little bad for Kelsey, too, because it was, I don't know, I just felt bad for both of them. I don't know. I don't know whose side I would really take, but I didn't feel bad. I thought it was hilarious, but yeah, you know, it was good TV. I didn't feel bad, but yeah.
I honestly don't know how I didn't. I just recently got asked. One of my buddies from my new hire class at United, he's watching the season back. I told him not to. He's watching the season back. He'd never seen it. And he's watching it back with his wife. And he's like, how did you, he'd just seen that that episode with the champagne. He's like, how did you not just bust up laughing? And I honestly don't know because I watch it back now and it's absolutely hilarious. But I think I just was like, I still felt so bad for her that I don't know why I didn't bust up laughing, but it was
pretty funny.
You got
the hell out of the way, that's for sure. You just stood up right away, like, oh.
Yeah, but I mean, even like those scenarios where it's like clearly the producers are setting these things up to like get in players' ways. Do you guys ever, as leads or players, talk to each other about like, oh, the producers are doing this, like, let it go, you know? Because people get really riled up about this, or at least that's what it looks like in the show. But I mean, we just saw on Bachelor in Paradise, Brendan is trying to explain to Demi something and they left it in the show. He's like, the producers are screwing with us. He says something like that to her. It's in the show. So I assume you guys have those conversations.
Honestly, so you're not privy to that, any of that information. Like, I had no idea, you know, when the whole blow up with, you know, Hannah Ann and Kelsey started. I didn't even know why that was the blow up. You really, especially as a lead, I think you were left out of so much, and it's done on purpose, I'm sure, right? Because if you knew everything, then you could figure it out, and then there really wouldn't be that much of a TV show with drama or whatnot. So there's literally, I knew nothing, and I kept just like wishing like I could just, you know, not in a creep way, right, but just have like cameras in the house in like the common areas so I could just see literally what happened and like watch it after like I got back to my hotel for the night and just actually see who was telling the truth, what actually went down, because going from person to person, it's just, you're not getting anywhere and you don't know who to believe and you barely know these people at this point. But I would say, yeah, as the lead, you know even less, and it's probably done on purpose, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, you're not going back through watching all the tapes, being like, no, I rule in favor of this person in Champagne Gate.
I would have loved to have been able to do a complete redo of everything, but like actually have the facts like ahead of time. It would have gone so differently. But again, it probably wouldn't have been a TV show. So what are you going to do?
Week 3, you guys travel to Cleveland. You have your one-on-one date with Victoria Fuller at an amusement park. You have a private concert with Chase Rice. Seem to be having a great time. Then you find out Victoria Fuller was romantically involved with Chase Rice, and you don't know about this. She doesn't seem to know about this. Rice doesn't seem to know about this. Seems like everybody is coming into this blind. Do you ever have a conversation where you're like, come on, you're putting her ex as the musical guest. How did that feel?
I think I told you guys the last time we talked, but so I totally acted that night at dinner. I knew, and I only knew because I wanted my iPad.
Wait,
oh,
you knew while you were at the concert?
I don't think
no,
you told us.
Didn't
this.
Know. I didn't know at the concert. I had no idea at the concert what was going on. I love Chase Rice. I've always been a big fan, and so they wouldn't. I didn't put two and two together. Like, I wasn't allowed to tell. It was going to be a surprise, right, for Victoria. So we walk up and had no idea that they had dated or whatnot. I ended up, you know, going to talk to Chase after. He doesn't tell me anything. No one's telling me anything. But then I, back at before that night portion of the day, I went on my iPad, and the only reason I had my iPad was because I had to bid for work to get work off from my airline schedule. Well, now I can say it, but I went on and I looked up a little something and I saw all this stuff. Chase Rice, the ex-boyfriend or something. I'm like, wait, what?
Oh,
I remember being
gosh.
In a room. I'm like, are you freaking kidding? Like, I remember thinking, how many other things have we already gone through? Like, just in these couple of weeks where I have no idea like what actually just went down. And but I saw that and I'm like, well, I can't like act like I know now. Like, so she's probably going to tell me here tonight. So I remember watching that back. And like, I'm just like full on acting job. I'm like, wait, Chase Rice from the concert. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, yeah, I already knew that. But it was,
oh my gosh. The pilot's iPad saved you.
The pilot's iPad. No one knew that. And so I think, I think I told you guys were the first ones, but,
Jesus.
I remember thinking that it wasn't even that big of a deal. I'm like, you know, I didn't care if they weren't dating still. Who cares? Like, I've dated people sure. in the past. Why is this a big deal? I get it was probably uncomfortable for her, but I remember it was like this. It became this huge thing, and like we had to like really talk about it. I'm like, it's just a previous relationship. Like, we're past it. Like, let's pursue our relationship. But yeah.
But I mean, did you think that was coincidental? Was there any part of you or like? Or Victoria Fuller, were you guys talking openly about like the producers are trying to blow us up with this?
I just remember, like, again, you had to play the game there, right? I couldn't tell the producers that I knew, but I'm just in my mind, I felt it was kind of dumb. I was just like, guys, why are we blowing? This is not a big deal. It's not like she's like leaving me right now to go for him for the concert for Chase or whatnot. Like, it's not like they're still dating. It's not like there's a scandal where she, you know, is dating him and is on the show with me. So I just remember, like, I was kind of over it. I was like, guys, it's not a big deal. And I had to feed into it a little bit because I couldn't tell him I knew, but I don't know.
God, that's fascinating. Shit.
Yeah.
So also that week, you have a 1-on-1 date with Kelsey Weir. For me personally, Kelsey Weir is the greatest hoojewer of all time.
Kelsey's a good
hoojewer. She did like, oh my God, Olympic level shit is what she would turn in every time. So I have to ask you, as the recipient of the greatest hoojew ever in the history of the game, what is it like? A, what is it like to just be the recipient of hoojews? What is it then like to be the recipient of the greatest hoojew of all time, which was not actually this one. It was what Kelsey Weir did in Costa Rica the following week. But this Suji was up there. This was like a 9.7, 9.8.
Her practice.
Yeah, she was a great hoojewer. I think actually the best hoojew was we went on a date in Peru when we went ATVing, and like she was coming down a hill. It was a little bit of a slope.
Yes.
And she was like, you know, getting some speed, and like I was standing at the bottom of the hill on like the slope, and just all that like momentum, like almost like back, I almost fell backwards.
Yes, dude, that's the one I was talking about.
Oh, that's
like a dead sprint down this fucking hill. She does like almost a triple jump. She's
yeah.
like boom, 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 double leg plant just like launches
she's
into
very
you.
Athletic.
It does look like she's gonna knock you over.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm saying. Like,
that's fact.
In terms of being the recipient, what is that like? Do you have to brace yourself? Do you like, what is it like the moment right before a mount, right before she leaps? Are you like, oh shit, I hope I don't fall down?
I think you like you want to like make sure that it's like not awkward, like it's because it's, I mean, you don't really do that in real life, obviously. Like, you're meeting someone like in New York outside of a bar for a date and they just like start sprinting up to them. It's so good. Like, this never happens in real life, so you don't have practice.
If you wear that shirt more, it will.
You know what, I'm gonna see what this does. All right, the next couple of dates I go, I'm gonna wear this out there. I'll update you guys. But it's yeah, I think for me, I'm just like trying to like make sure I catch her right and like we don't bang heads, because like I had like a lot of clumsy moments before, like with picking up girls or whatever. Like, it, so I had my share of clumsiness. So whenever like a hoojew would happen, like I try to make it smooth or whatnot. But yeah, Kelsey, she knocked it out every single time, out of the park.
Yeah, you also had some bad hoojews on your season. No offense. The hoojew is a subsport that some people can do, some people can't. Madison Pruitt had one of the worst ones we've ever seen, where she
one of the worst ones.
One of the worst ones. I forget which date it was on. You guys meet on a dock. She comes up to you. It's kind of a weak mount. She doesn't even get any leg wrapping around you.
Oh,
it's just
yeah.
like kind of a dead legged hoojew.
It was like
she was a great player, just a bad hoojewer.
I think we would. I think, yeah, I'd make fun of her for that, because we had this little like mermaid jump that we would do. Actually, I know exactly what you're talking about, because she would never wrap her legs and it would always look like she was a mermaid. So we had a little inside joke about that.
Her mermaid jump. I love that.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Clues, have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered
Hell yes.
why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised?
Hell yes. Well, unfiltered mineral water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And about 75% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine.
I thought it was 85%. And that's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin.
Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation's a breeze, and it's unique. Quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market.
Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription.
Even better, anybody listening to Gore right now can use code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you.
Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Extraordinary hoo-jewer Kelsey Weir, Week 4 in Costa Rica, does a knock-knock. She does a little bit of a make-me-stay, and you pull a rose out of what looks like the couch. She secures to what we believe is the first knock-knock rose in Bachelor history. Did you know what she was coming to discuss? How did this come about?
I don't. And remind me again, what did she discuss? What did she...
She was, I believe, having an altercation with Tammy.
Tammy, yeah. Oh, it was with the like the pill-popping accusation. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know. I didn't know it was going to be her. You know, she comes up, surprises me. I knew there was going to be someone coming, right? Because you're getting ready for it. But, you know, obviously you don't know who it is. And was super excited. You know, I was really into Kelsey. So I was, you know, it was awesome to have some one-on-one time with her away from everyone else and not necessarily having to be like on a group date, but just to kind of chill. And, you know, I just remember wanting to make her feel, I could tell that she was a little bit unsure of like where she was in the whole process and then having the accusations and the drama with Tammy and whatnot. And she was a little stressed. So I just remember telling the producers I wanted to give her a rose then. And no one told me to do that. And then I think, yeah, the way it was cut, it looked like I remember going out to get it. And then I had it like behind in my like shorts, like behind under my shirt. Uh-oh. And then I brought it with me into the room because obviously she would have seen it if it was in the couch there. And so that's how I hit it getting in. But yeah, just wanted to give her that validation and not have her be kind of so stressed out because I was, you know, I was feeling it there.
You invented the knock knock rose.
Yeah, you really did. I mean, that was the first one we ever saw. But Jesse Palmer handed out the first impression rose, similarly tucked into the waistband of his shirt, hidden in his suit jacket. So you're trying to, pulling off a little bit of that right there.
Yeah,
the historical.
You
got to
switch it up a little bit, you know, keep it interesting.
Yeah. In week five, you have a group date cocktail party where you eliminate Victoria Paul before the rose ceremony. Is that something you have to negotiate with producers if you're going to do an early elimination, like outside of the rose ceremony, or can you just do it at any time?
No, that was just, that was in the moment. I remember, yeah, it was just a super uncomfortable talk. And I remember we were on that couch in Chile. Yeah. And, I just remember because we'd had like, you know, she was one of the first one-on-ones I had and it went really well and I was really excited about it. But then just again, kind of the process of the show that it either can continue going well or it can lose some of that energy, obviously, just because you don't have another one-on-one for such a long time. And I don't think our relationship was strong enough to really kind of maintain that large of a gap between quality, like a really quality time with each other. And so I guess I just known for a little bit and she could probably sense it a little bit and it was uncomfortable. And, you know, she, I didn't want to, you know, drag it out, I guess, anymore with her. I think she, you know, was still holding on to a lot of that momentum from original, like early on in the season. And, I guess to answer your question, no, like that wasn't like talked about with producers. I just in the moment knew that, okay, this is where this conversation's going and, you know, I had to walk her out.
Week seven is hometowns. This is more of a just kind of general question about hometowns for a lead. We kind of perceive hometowns as like the point in the game where the lead really now has to start playing a little bit of a game. You're at least traditionally trying to get blessings from the families. You're trying to get what we call glows, which is when you walk in and a mom or a dad will tell either their child or you potentially, I can tell you're glowing. It's kind of like an admission that you're visually in love.
Right.
And so how nerve-wracking is that week, or is it kind of like, is it kind of okay because you have the buffer of like a TV crew with you? So yes, you have to go meet these four families, but it's under the guise of this big kind of like TV production. Does that help you? Does that hinder you? What is it like to meet four families back to back to back to back? Well, you didn't meet Victoria Fuller's family, but you were about to. But you know what I mean? Like, what? I can't imagine what that is like.
It's funny. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think I've ever thought about that, but that specifically what you're asking. You know, I think everybody's nervous, right? I was nervous for sure because you want to make such a great impression, you know, meeting the family of the girl that you're, you know, pretty serious with. You know, the girl was probably maybe the least nervous, I would say, just because she's so excited to see her family because it's been so long. At least for me, like I remember I wasn't too, I was just so excited to see my family on Hannah's season. You know, it'd been so long. So you're like the one connector between the parties. So if there's anyone that's a little bit less nervous, it's maybe that person. But the families, you know, they're probably not used to this whole production, this whole, you know, this TV crew in your house, the cameras everywhere, lights, mics everywhere. So I think there's a little bit of nerve. So I think it almost like knowing that everyone's a little bit nervous and not super, super comfortable, it almost makes you a little bit more comfortable because you're all in this kind of together and helps you kind of connect in a weird way. I enjoyed for the most part, all the hometowns, the ones that I got to go to. So, everyone's kind of nervous there. So it's not natural. You'd probably like to have longer, you know, more one-on-one. Well, listen, you're never going to go straight usually to a hometown and ask for a blessing to marry their daughter the first time you ever met them, right? Like, that's not very normal. So
I know.
I think you just kind of take it for what it is, and you're buying into it. So you're like, all right, I'm going for this, and this is what I'm hoping it comes out of this. And if it does, great. If not, well, maybe we still have some time down the road. But very interesting, thing to go through.
This is just a side note, but Dustin or Peter, did either of you, when you were going on The Bachelorette, prepare your family at all for that possibility of having a hometown?
Yeah.
You did? Oh.
Well, yeah, on the show, yeah. I mean, I don't know. My parents didn't want me to have a hometown. They were like, you better not bring camera crews here or anything. Like, they were not having that at all. And then, like, further down in the show, as you get further on, the producers, like, they get more information about you and your family. They get their telephone number just in case they have to start making those arrangements. So.
Did you come up with, like, strategies or anything? Did you tell them, like, look, if I get far enough in this, I'm coming here with a camera crew, whether you like it or not, and you got to be on your best behavior. Like, I need you to be on my side in this shit.
Yeah, I never really had that conversation. It's kind of hard to say. For me, it takes me so long to fall for someone. Like, I never saw that as being a reality. And I even told the producers, like, it takes so long for me to, like, honestly fall for someone. And I just knew that wasn't going to happen. And I didn't even know who the Bachelorette was going to be until I got there that day. And, I never really had my eye on Hannah. You know, she was a great girl and a little bit of an age difference, but I was open to getting to know her. But I didn't think it was going to – I knew hometowns wasn't a possibility.
Immediately, yeah. Night one.
Dang.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you were just like, fuck it, I'm going to see how long I can go. Maybe I'll get a trip overseas somewhere. Like,
I was there, as last time we talked, like, I was there for the experience. Like,
totally.
I didn't go on there really to find love. I was open to it if it happened to happen, but I went on there for the experience. Like, that doesn't happen to everybody.
You did find love.
The good choice. With I know, Peter. Right? Got this guy right here.
We did. we hooed you every night.
Hooed you.
The dynamic duo.
100% joke. We don't.
Is it really, though? Is it really a joke?
I hooed you a trip, my dog.
I would love to see that. Almost every hometown date, you have a moment where the parents are asking the lead, basically, do you know if their kid is the one? Madison Pruitt's father asked this. Are you supposed to not say this, or are you supposed to just, or they edit it out, or is there
I will say this,
a way you're supposed to handle the parents?
I again can only speak on so much, but I 100% butchered that question with how I really should have done it, and that's probably, probably not saying much. I wish I could go into more detail, but that's one thing that I was like, oh, I should have just done what I wanted to do here, and you know, that'd have been it. We'd figure out a way, you know, later on or whatnot. But that's one of the things that I butchered for sure.
That's been better. To me, that's one of the most interesting parts of what a lead has to do is the interaction with these parents in these hometowns, because it, like, all the parents are going to ask you some version of, like, are you picking my daughter or not?
Right.
And obviously you can't say that. You can't, right. I mean, it goes against the show. You're right. To some degree contractually obligated to make sure you have a fulfilling end to the season and all that shit. But it's like, these parents don't give a shit about that. In most cases, I think these parents are like skeptical of this whole process anyway. They've seen however many seasons. Exactly, of course. And that to me is like that little dance that you have to do as a lead with those parents, to me, I think is like one of the hardest things to do in the game, to make a satisfying hometowns week without something like a Victoria Fuller happening where it just all blows up in your face, or like, who knows what you're going to have to deal with walking through that door,
right?
A crazy brother, a crazy uncle, like whatever, you know, who's just going to sabotage the whole thing. I don't know. To me, that's like
a dead
by my
estimation, funeral.
The most nerve wracking week. But
I mean, obviously again, it probably makes for good TV, but I wish that if I had one wish for something like for a change, it'd be that you don't have to meet the families until the end. You know, like you, I would love to
That's a good question.
I think it's cool to go and explore where that, you know, girl, where that guy's from and, you know, enjoy a date out in their, you know, neck of the woods and whatnot and hear about their family and have them, you know, really have that be the week where they kind of open up about that. But I just wish that it's so, like you just said, it's impossible to navigate. Like, I didn't do a good job of it. And it's, I don't even know how you do a good job of it without blatantly just saying, yes, this is the one person that I'm thinking. And then all the other ones, no, I'm sorry. I'm just here because, you know, I got to be here. But there's just, there is no good way to navigate that. So I wish if I could change anything, it'd be that you don't meet the family until the end if you were to get engaged with, you know, and I get that.
That would be boring.
You
no,
don't
you
get
can't
the,
do that.
I would this like to the, see you in that position, bro. It is so difficult.
I don't want to be in that position. But yeah, it's like the only time you could be like, yeah, I'm in love with your daughter, but I'm also dating these two other girls.
But it's also
so unnatural. So
every single season, it's the same thing. You know, it's the parents, well, are you sure? It's like, so let's switch it up a little bit. Let's, you know, let's change
nah,
it up.
That's too boring. That's too boring.
Okay.
Could you imagine doing that in
Dustin,
real life? Could you imagine doing that in real life?
What, like is, going the, what is the one thing you would change about this game if you could?
What would I change about this game? Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know what I would change, honestly. That's a hard question. I didn't think about that.
Boring.
I would change, make there be eight
hometown dates.
Speaking of that, I wish they would stop with those. I wish they would stop with the bullshit that happens every year. Like, it's like, hey, I feel this way about, like, let's just stop. Let's just be real. I'm sorry, my dog's really loud. Let's just be real and just stop with the typical bachelor shit that says, like, you know, I'm here for the right reasons, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Let's just be honest and open and just see how things work out. I don't know.
That's not the game, though, man. The game has these structured pieces that players have to hit. I mean, it's been established over 25 years of evolution, you know.
Yeah, I guess the only thing you'd miss out with my suggestion is, yeah, you don't get the blessing, and yes, that's a big thing. So I guess you got to find it. But then I think, yeah, I did mine after. I didn't get any blessings actually at hometown, so you don't need it there.
The most blessings has been 3 of 4.
How about 0 for 4? Has anyone done that? Am I the only person and I get one?
No, there weren't blessings for many seasons.
Oh, okay.
Week 8, Fantasy Suites, you're in Australia. Did you know that all 3 players were living together during Fantasy Suites week? I believe this had not been done before.
I did, yeah. And the producers were actually really cool about it. They asked me what I thought about it, and you know, they brought to my attention, hey, you're thinking about doing this, what do you think? And I honestly, like, I didn't, hindsight, I would have probably said no, but in the moment I was like, yeah. And I gave them my blessing for it. I was like, yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't know why I thought that, though. I really don't, because I think I remember my experience when you're like kind of secluded on your own. It's okay. I think it's kind of like you're really just in your feelings, like with that person. You're really just, you know, just when you're not on that date the whole day, it's just at least for me, I was just talking to my producer about my feelings and what I'm thinking, the future, like the next couple of days, what's going to happen. I guess if you're living with each other, it kind of distracts from that in a way. So I wish I would have done a little bit more hard thinking about that before I told them. But yeah, they were super upfront with me and asked me, and I was like, yeah, that's fine.
Interesting. Yeah, to our knowledge, that was the first time that had happened. And then they obviously played it for some extreme drama as that week unfolded. But yeah, after your Fantasy Suites, you go into your finale, and obviously your mom plays a big part in that finale. Did you know going into this process, we had seen her obviously on your hometown in season 15. Did you know that she was going to essentially become the star of the season? Did you have any feeling of that going into it? Like, my mom's going to blow up.
I mean, no, obviously there was no way to kind of predict that, but you know, it, mom's the best. I honestly, that's all I can say with that. And obviously, you know, I'm very close to my mom. So, you know, it's been crazy to kind of see all this like support that she's, you know, gotten from, I mean, literally never could have predicted that in a million years. But listen, at the end of the day, it's just me and my mom being real with each other, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I mean, there was no way to predict that. She's the first superstar parent that we've gotten from the show.
Yeah, pretty crazy, but
she had more screen time than any parent by a mile.
She probably did, yeah. Honestly, yeah, looking back on it. But I think that was just my whole family was, that was the whole point. Like, I think my family was always going to be very involved with the season. You know, I was able to FaceTime. I don't know if, mm-hmm. you know, Leeds have done that in the past. Maybe they have. But I was able to talk with them a couple times, you know, throughout the season, and obviously see them on, you know, the date early on in the season with the vow renewals and whatnot. So I was all about that. I was on board, you know, having them be a big part of it.
In the finale, you have a ponder shot on a rock. What is it like to do ponder shots? What we call ponder shots. Where you're like sitting down, you're looking off in the distance, thinking about love.
They, as the seasons always progress, there are more and more of these shots that come in for players, but Leeds have the most of them. And yeah. In some cases, like this one specifically that Lizzie's talking about, they have you like strangely, precariously perched on this rock. You're sitting on it with your legs kind of pulled up, and it's like obviously a place no human being would ever be like, I'm going to go sit on that rock. That looks comfortable. So like, how do they set these shots up? How long did they ask you to do this? There was one this past season on season 17 of Justin Glaze leaning against this giant tree out of the middle of nowhere, and you're just like, what the fuck are they doing to this guy?
No, honestly, like I did a lot of that on my own. Like I would just go out and just like on my own, and I'd like ask the camera crew to like follow me, and I'd just be like, hey, can you guys, you know, can you catch me just staring off into the distance? And
oh, you directed these.
Oh no, that's, I'm fucking incredible. With you guys.
Hey guys,
like, I really need to go do some staring.
I'm extremely
cool. You better come get this.
And they're like, are we done yet? No. Get, like two more minutes. I'm almost, wait, there we go. I'm good now.
I actually low key believe this.
Screw you, Destiny, for believing that. All right. That's part of the show, man. That's part of the Bachelor contemplating and wondering what the hell you are doing in that moment. Because there's a lot of, I didn't know what I was doing. So I will say, you know, I probably actually took a lot of advantage of that time to just kind of try to think and get in my head, because I was so damn confused the entire time. So that's just part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job of confusing you. I think anybody in that situation would be hard-pressed to know what was actually going on. And one of the final things they do to you is they tell you that Hannah Ann might not show up to the final rose ceremony. And to us, again, from an outsider's perspective, it looks like they kind of tried to do this with Madison Pruitt at the fantasy suite rose ceremony. They did a similar kind of thing. She didn't show up, and then all of a sudden she comes in. And we know the producers have control over who's coming and going at what times. And it seems like this is something that they purposely did to kind of raise your stress and anxiety levels in this final moment that, at least by the standards of the show, is supposed to be the moment when you finally decide, this is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. How much are you like aware of the fact that they might be fucking with you? Do you like at all suspect that, or are you just like so overwhelmed by it? Because obviously in the show, like, you have to lay down, Chris Harrison's in there trying to like soothe you while he's also telling you this thing that may be a lie. Like, how much does that kind of factor in to your entire experience of moments like that, that like you don't maybe know if this is real or not?
Is truly the most difficult, one of the most difficult things. Like, I, well, for sure, like, emotional turmoil wise, toughest thing I've ever had to experience in my life. And like, I remember that, like, just because, like, really at the end there, like, I had feelings for all three of them. Yes, some were stronger than others, but I had strong, legitimate feelings for all three of them. And I remember that, like, that, the fantasy suite rose ceremony there. I just, like, it was horrible, man. It was so bad. I literally, like, I'd start walking, and I like had to tell them, I just started breaking down. I couldn't do the walk up to go up to the stage, and like, I was like, I can't gather myself right now. Like, I am so pulled in so many directions. I like have, you know, it was insane. It was so bad. And then just knowing to, like, having hurt people and like, and what was coming next. It was so difficult. So that one was, I remember that took me, I had to keep stopping them. Like, hey, like Paulie, one of the guys that always, that runs the ceremony. He's like, I need a minute. And I'd go and I had to stop again. And then at the end, I remember when Chris came up to me and told me that I literally had nothing left. I was so just like so drained. And then on top of it, it was extremely hot that day. It was hot every day there. But, you know, you're in a suit, you're standing there for a while, you know, waiting. And I was so, so drained. And then I got that news and I just like, I had like nothing left to like keep pushing. I just was like, I didn't even know what to say to him. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I've got nothing left. Like, I'm to my point. And that's when I was like, I just need to go. And like, we went to that like little house there and just, I laid down and I didn't think I could go forward with anything. I really didn't. Obviously gathered myself and talked it out a little bit. You know, came back a little bit, but it was just, yeah, it is one of those points that really no one can truly, like, no one will ever be able to understand because it's just so unique. Yeah. But just the epitome of being drained.
It seemed like in that final week that they were doing even small things to try and just like break you down. Like when they have you go talk to Madison Pruitt, even where you're sitting, you guys are being like eaten alive by these giant flies. Even like these small, subtle things seem almost designed to just make everything as hard as possible, you know?
Yeah, that was I remember the fly thing was, that was where we were at. Alice Springs is a big thing there. But yeah, I mean, again, obviously I could have handled the whole situation, especially towards the end, better for sure. And it probably would have made it easier on me. I'm not blaming really anyone for this. It is what it is. But it was very, very draining. I think I just put so much of myself into it. And then I was so committed kind of all just came like crashing down. And but hey, on the flip end here, being able to get through that, I truly am grateful for that experience, because I'm like, if I can get through that, there's yeah, pretty much nothing I can't get through. Like, that was tough. That was really, really tough.
Totally. To me, I think it's one of the craziest like psychological gauntlets any human being on planet Earth can go through.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, you watch it all play out, just all the things you're talking about. It's astounding that anyone makes it through it, honestly.
Yeah, we had talking
about, to get so much feedback.
For sure. No, I mean, we were talking about that. We had a guest on our podcast talking about, she's a relationship doctor, essentially expert. And she was just giving us like a perspective of like, we're kind of lucky to have gone through an experience like that, because not many people get to see how they act in relationships, like with such a, like a detailed synopsis of like how you handle certain situations. And so, you know, if you truly want to learn something from that and how you are and get better in certain ways, like the show honestly probably is the best avenue for that. So if you kind of can have that perspective, like we're pretty lucky to have gone through something like this just to take that moving forward.
Instant replay. That's what we get.
Yeah. Instant replay of your love life.
Yeah, you're like, once I lift someone onto a pool table, I definitely need to watch for the lights.
Yep. a lot of clumsy errors like that, but you live and you learn, so.
No, I really appreciate you going back through this with us. We, you know, we have a million questions and appreciate you talking to us about this experience, especially because it seems incredibly stressful. Now you guys have this podcast, you're talking to previous players. Like, what has that experience been like? Has it changed your view of the franchise at all?
What do you think, Dusty?
It's been great. It feels good being on this side. Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of like it. And I don't know. I'm like a,
we like it too.
I never really watched a show before, and now I'm just like a spectator. I wish, honestly, I knew what I knew now going into it, but it's not how it happened. But I like being on the side, talking shit and talking about people. It's good. Good life.
Hey. Totally. I honestly think you guys were in the last kind of phases of people just going into the show, not having watched that much of it, not really knowing what's going on. Mm-hmm. I liken it to like back in the first
you know, 1890s when Major League Baseball first started, there were some guys who were just like super good because they were like really athletic, but they didn't know much about baseball. They didn't spend their whole lives training, but they were good enough in that era to be like professional level players. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, ultimately, we're where we are now. We're like the day you're born, you're trained to be a baseball player and everything's perfect and all. You get like Mike Trout coming out of it and stuff. But I think like you guys did very good for the era you came in. And now we're just like, it's a different time now.
It's a whole new ball game. Everybody's
seen everything. You get people like Hunter Montgomery coming in where it's like they call him the bachelor historian or whatever, you know, and that dude knows the game cold. And it's like he can do whatever he can do with that, but he knows the game for sure.
Yeah,
it's really amazing how well a lot of these guys do on camera, like right off the bat. Like I modeled a little bit before going on the show, and still in front of the camera, I was just shell-shocked. I just could not open up. My personality could not come out. And some of these people are just at it. And again, like you said, Chad, I think it just goes from them just watching years of it and just preparing for it. I don't know.
And totally. Practicing. Yeah. Connor B talked about how his mom practiced bullying him to prepare him to come on.
Wait, what? I didn't hear that. No.
Really?
Wow. He talked about it on a podcast and was just like, yeah, she was like, people are going to come at you and be like, you're a musician, you just want to make money being a musician, like you're a piece of shit or something like that.
It truly is like, you know, when you're a kid, or at least when I was a kid, the whole thing when you're in like in a baseball game and you're imagining it's bottom of the ninth, two outs, your team's down by one, the World Series, all that shit. I think the same now exists for people in bachelor scenarios where it's like, this is what I do on my night one or my fantasy suite. And it becomes this, like you're envisioning these future kind of sports moves. And I think like, especially on bachelorette, not so much. I think guy players are still like a little behind the curve, but on bachelor, you're not going to see any players coming into bachelor from this point forward who don't know everything about the game.
Thanks to you guys. You guys just really gave the book out there for success.
Yeah, it'll be out January 18th. Everyone will then really know all the different components of the game.
Gameplays. Gameplays for sure.
What do you think that's going to keep? I mean, you think that's good for it? The future of the show moving forward? Or what do you think that does to it here, like the near future?
Totally. I think the only way to keep it alive is a full embracing of the sports mechanics. Because really? I don't, like, we're watching ratings dwindle season after season. This Bachelor in Paradise ratings, I haven't looked at what last night's were. We're recording this on Tuesday, August 24th. But their first episode was the lowest rated Bachelor in Paradise ratings of all time. And obviously Katie Thurston's season had very low ratings too. That could be a symptom of network TV just dying because more people are watching it on streaming or, you know, wherever.
I think I scared everyone away after my season. So I'm going to peace.
The pandemic changed viewing habits and all that kind of stuff too.
So much competition out there with different beach shows and dating shows as well.
There are a lot. Yeah. A lot of more competition for sure.
And it's in a little bit of a gray area where they're trying to figure out the hosting and they're trying to figure out how they can get back to it looking a little more traditional. Like, I mean, your season had all the bells and whistles. You were flying around to different countries. You're going on yachts, helicopters, like you had it all. Right. And then we go immediately into the bubble seasons, which had literally none of that.
I think that's the biggest thing.
It takes a toll.
The travel is huge for the show. Just that, I think a lot of people watch for it too in the adventure. So hopefully, you know, world opens up and we can get back to that and get some more seasons like that.
It looks like Michelle Young's season has a little bit of that, but we sincerely cannot thank you guys enough for joining us to talk about your season 24 and all of your social media habits as children and all the stuff that you watch. So sure. Thanks to
MSN Chad.
Peter and Dustin. Yeah. Shout out to MSN Chad. If anybody's still on that, you can hit
What was your screen name on that?
Mine?
Yeah.
It was probably like D-Man something. I used to go by D-Man.
D-Man. I've never heard that before.
D-Man 43. That was D-Man. My basketball number. D-Man 43. Yeah, I remember.
Oh, my God.
There you go, guys. You heard it here first.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's definitely what we're going to call you forever now.
D-Man.
Yeah,
man.
We got Popeye and D-Man 43.
Oh,
Popeye,
man.
I just, D-Man. I also just want to thank you so much for we got on this call and you guys were all wearing the Hooju shirts and I just, it was like, I don't know. It just really meant a lot. And it,
course, guys.
Chat was so tickled. He was tickled by this, man. He was tickled. He
was I couldn't believe it because it was everyone was wearing it. I could not believe it. But thanks again, and obviously everybody, go check out Bachelors in the City, a fantastic podcast done by Peter and Dustin, or sorry, Popeye and D-Man 43.
There you go. And,
Peter also has a book that I believe you can pre-order right now, right?
I do, yeah. I'm super excited about it. The Adventures of Pilot Pete. It's you can go on my Instagram. I got the link there for pre-ordering. You get a first edition signed copy. It'll be out in November. And just a good children's book to hopefully inspire, you know, children to follow their dreams. And it's what I did. And I'm really proud of it. So I'm excited.
Awesome. D-Man, you got anything else?
My startup, Guaranteed Karma. You can go on our website, find different opportunities to volunteer, and we give you perks from local businesses around the city. Hence Guaranteed Karma. You do that's something amazing. Good, you get something out of it. There you go.
Yeah, that's good awesome. Stuff. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, guys.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Thank you, everyone who joined us for this incredible conversation that we got to have with Peter Weber and Dustin Kendrick, a.k.a. Popeye and D-Man 43. This was a fascinating conversation for us to have. We learned a lot about the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff that happened all throughout Season 24, especially about some of the bigger moments there. And please, if you would, go check out Bachelors in the City podcast. And if you got the time and inclination, leave them a good review. Leave them a 5-star rating if you can and help get their podcast a little traction. They would appreciate it and we would appreciate it because they took the time to sit down with us and say all the things that they said. So once again, thanks everybody for joining us and we will see you next week.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us and then
creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
We're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, Pace Case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me. Tell me the number.
That's a Pace Case glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night, Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. and this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin, but now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the Dewy Day Cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the Restorative Night Cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time. And it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.